IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Shooting Space, my podcast where I talk to people within the game that are inspiring to me and that I think you should know. I'm so excited to have Dana Boyle on today. Dana is just a wonderful, wonderful friend, commentator, analyst in the game. And I've just really, really had the pleasure of getting to know her over the past year, year and a half working together. So wanted to make sure we had a chance to chat with her.
Thanks so much for having me. You talk about inspiring. I mean, hello. Stop. Official lax girl making waves.
Stop. I'm blushing. Yeah, it's been a wild ride as OLG and it continues, and just super, super blessed and lucky to get the chance to not only do the work that we get to do, but get to build relationships and collaborate with you, with Amari, with all these other amazing people. So Dana, for everyone listening, can you give us a little background about you? Who is Dana Boyle?
That's a good question. I am originally from New Hampshire, so that is my roots. I grew up in New England for 18 years, and I went to UVA. Then I worked in the athletic department in fundraising, and somehow I found my way to the booth and started broadcasting. And so now I serve as a analyst for lacrosse for ESPN, the ACC network. And it's been a wild ride to get here, and lots of ups and downs, lots of excitement, challenges. So I'm just really grateful, like you mentioned, to be in the position where we do get to tell the stories of so many incredible women in the sport, and they serve as role models, and to be able to be that voice or one of the voices in the game is really inspiring. And I'm constantly learning every day.
Yeah, absolutely. Same here. That was a great, great summation. I feel like your elevator pitch. Yes, we love it. So tell us a little bit about when you started playing lacrosse. You mentioned being from New Hampshire. When did you pick up a stick, and when were you like, okay, I like this and I'm pretty good at it?
So that's really funny because I didn't start playing lacrosse until like seventh grade. And it was because I got so sick of playing travel soccer. I was so burned out. And I had one friend, one of my, like, my best friends growing up in high school, in middle school and elementary school, she started playing lacrosse. So she veered away from soccer. And I was like, you know what? I'm sick of soccer. I'm going to jump ship and I'm going to play lacrosse. And so that's how I got involved. But I played so many different sports growing up. I mean, baseball, softball. I was a really big wakeboarder. Basketball was probably one of my favorite sports. I wanted to play basketball at the University of Tennessee so bad. I am not good at basketball, but I know I'm only 5'7", but basketball was like my first true love. I remember watching Pat Summitt and Carol Lawson and Candace Parker. Like, those were the girls that were on the Tennessee team when I was growing up. And women's lacrosse wasn't really on TV. Soccer was sort of on TV, but women's basketball, I always feel like, has been this like staple. And that was the first time that I saw women playing a sport at a high level on TV.
Right.
And it was inspiring. And I remember, like, every birthday, my dad would take me to either Knoxville when they played Connecticut or Hartford when the two teams met, and out of conference, obviously. And I just remember sitting there watching and just being so inspired and like captivated, not just by Pat Summitt, but by the women that were on the court. And it started to click, and maybe I couldn't have conceptualized it until I got a little bit older, but I was like, oh, you can be really good at a sport and go to college.
Yeah.
And it sort of clicked. And that was kind of the transition. I did play basketball all the way through high school, but I knew that I was not good enough to play at the next level. So lacrosse kind of became that passion. It was fast. It's a mix of basketball. A lot of the times we always talk about it, you know, in our group texts, like Charlotte North, she played basketball. You can see the translation with the skill. So it was fast paced. And so lacrosse was really appealing in that way. Nothing against soccer, but you know, the ball moves very fast in lacrosse and there's a lot of action going on. And I just sort of fell in love with it. And I love to run, or used to run, not so much anymore. We take a sideline, we stationary bike now. But it was a fast pace and it was fun. And some of my friends played. And to be honest, that's kind of what hooked me. And then I started going to camps and clinics, and the rest is history.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. And I feel like there's kind of that pipeline of the, like the soccer to lacrosse or the field hockey to lacrosse. And it's always a friend, you know, it was the same for me. A friend was playing lacrosse and I'd never heard of it. You know, I was ninth grade. I'd never heard of lacrosse and come from a family that played lacrosse. But I said, you know what? Okay. You know, I'm kind of tired of being field hockey goalie. Let me go to this lacrosse practice or try out and just see what happens. And, you know, like you back in the day, I loved to run and just kind of ran all around and did my thing and had no stick skills whatsoever. Did not know how to even hold the stick, but I just loved how quick it was and how fun it was and how quick the ball moved, how the ball hit the net, all of those things. I feel like that's what kind of starts that spark of wanting to play, is just the way the game itself is.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And it's a really athletic game. So you don't necessarily initially have to be really good at lacrosse. If you're an athlete, that sport is for you. And then hopefully you have great coaches who can morph and transform you into this lacrosse player. But I think that's the most important thing that I've taken away from it. I've spent time coaching at the high school level, at the club level, and you know, the best lacrosse players are the best athletes, mm-hmm. and they play multiple different sports. So a lot of the times when I'm coaching, you know, I'm saying, you know, you got to play other sports. Don't just specialize in lacrosse. You know, if you're a good athlete, if you're, you know, diversified in your skill set, some college coach will pick you up.
Right.
And I think that's the takeaway. I hate to see kids that just play lacrosse or like just play soccer. I mean, I did, and then I got sick of it and I got burnt out and I quit. Right. So I think it's important to play different sports because they do translate so well to the game of lacrosse.
Absolutely. I agree. So how did you end up at UVA?
It's a good question. People just assume that I'm from the Maryland
area,
and I'm not. It was a pretty untraditional path, I would say. When I was getting recruited, junior days were really big. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if the recruiting process has sped up so fast that now that's not really a thing. So I got to see a lot of different schools before I decided where I wanted to go. And I knew that I wanted to play in the ACC. That was a goal that I had for myself. And I didn't want to play in New England because as a high school kid, I was like, I can't wait to get away far away from home as I can. And that's nothing against any of the schools in New England, but I had a goal and I wanted to play in the ACC and I wanted to play somewhere warm because growing up in New Hampshire, it's very cold for a lot of the months. And so I ended up going to a few camps. I remember going to the Duke winter camp. I think I was like a sophomore in high school. And it was like 55 degrees in December. And I was like out in my penny and like all the other girls are like in like sweatshirts. And I'm like, y'all, like
it's so warm.
10 degrees in New Hampshire. I was like, I'm in just my penny, like sun's out, guns out. Like I'm going to get a tan when I go back. So I went to the Duke winter camp and then just a bunch of other summer camps. And I ended up going to the UVA summer camp and fell in love with Charlottesville. It was amazing. And after that camp, I believe I was a junior, Julie called me on the phone. I was like super nervous. And she asked me if I wanted to commit. And of course I said yes. And me being me and like doubting myself, I was like, do you think I can play there? And she was like, yes. What are you talking about? Wow, I wouldn't be offering you a spot. So that's sort of how I ended up at UVA. It just, everything fell into place. And I'm so grateful that it did because Charlottesville is a great place and I still live here. And I'm so thankful for every experience I had because I do not think I would be in the position that I'm in without those experiences at UVA.
Yeah, definitely. And what was it about UVA, like both on the, because I'm, for what I know about the school, obviously the academics are really strong and the sports programs we know are super strong. Obviously Coach Julie Meyer is a great coach as well. So what, like, you know, handful of things really stuck out for you and made you think, okay, this is where I want to be and where I see myself growing?
I think I was a little naive and I was just so excited to play in college and play in the ACC that I was sort of blinded in many ways, I think as a lot of young kids are. But for me, what initially made me want to commit was the girls that I met, the teammates that I met that were currently playing on the team. So welcoming. There was such an environment of like love and respect and energy that to me, I was like, I can see myself in a lot of these current players. I could come here and I could be really happy. And I remember my mom and dad saying, I'm the oldest. So I was like the first one in the family to go to college. And I remember my mom and dad saying, you know, you need to pick a school where if you could never play lacrosse again, like, would you be happy there? And so to me, that was always in the back of my mind. Granted, I didn't make the decision at the time because of that, because I was 16, 17 years old. So I was like, oh, UVA, like cool gear, like Nike, all that kind of stuff. That's exciting. But I remember that being like really important to my parents. And it is a really good school. And I was really challenged. And I went to public school. So when I went to UVA my freshman year, I was very out of my league. I was challenged. I remember calling home, crying to my parents saying, I'm going to fail out. I'm not going to make it. And it does take a while to get adjusted to college. You know, high school is very different, not just academically, but also athletically. So that was sort of how I knew that UVA was the right fit. The people really make the place. And I think that's applicable to everything, not just college, but it was special. And I'm really grateful. And I also still live here. So clearly it was great.
It worked out. Things were good. That's awesome. And so kind of jumping forward a couple years, you know, you obviously played and had made a couple all ACC teams and had success on the field as well. But you also found your way into the broadcast booth pretty like at the end of your college career, but pretty early on in your life, I would say.
Yeah, I think my playing career at UVA was sort of a roller coaster. And this kind of is going back to your other question, but you know, my experience was unique to me at the time. I got hurt twice. I had two hip surgeries. So I really only played 2 out of the 4 years, which going back to what my parents said before I even committed, you know, you need to find a school that you love the school for the school. So it kind of became full circle in that moment. And, you know, having two surgeries is difficult. And, you know, I can empathize with any player that's injured and hurt. And you take on a different role and you're part of the team, but you're not really part of the team because you're on the sidelines and you don't get that conversation during practice and the lines and the drills. So that was really difficult for me. And I'm in a military family. So my dad is a pilot in the Army, or he's since retired. But during my first year at UVA, he got deployed to Afghanistan. So I was like 12 hours away from home. My mom and my sister were at home. And so I didn't really feel like I had a connection to my family because I was going through such a difficult time. But I'm so thankful that I was where I was because I was so supported by not just Julie and Colleen, but by my teammates. So my experience playing at UVA was different, so to speak. But I think it helped shape me for who I am today and what I wanted to do. I knew that I loved lacrosse, but there was something bigger that I think was important. And, you know, it challenged me. It, you know, gave me a lot of happy moments, but also a lot of sad moments. Like, let's be honest, like not every year, regardless if you're hurt or not, you know, not every second of every day of every practice is amazing when you're playing in college. It's really difficult and you go through these pitfalls, but it's, you know, your mentality and it's your attitude. Can you pick yourself back up? That really helped me later on in my career. And now being in the broadcasting chair, you know, it's important for me to, you know, highlight these women that are not just really good at sport. That's not just their identity. It wasn't my identity. It still isn't my identity. So let the viewers and the people who are watching know that, you know, so-and-so is a rock star on the field, but they're also incredible in the classroom. And this generation, they're going to change the world. And we need that. And we need to support them. So that was kind of my motivation for getting into broadcasting. During my fourth year, I had an opportunity to take a redshirt year, but I didn't. I really wanted to go to grad school. I wanted to study higher ed. And so I had a great conversation with Julie and she was like, I understand, like you struggled through some injuries, like you got to do what you got to do, which I think was such an important thing that I'm so thankful that I had her blessing to do that. So I stayed in Charlottesville. I went to grad school, got my master's in higher ed and started to maybe figure out what I wanted to do. But lacrosse wasn't really on TV. Like Sheehan was the only person calling TV who's, she's a goat. She's a goat. She's very humble, but I like to blow her up.
Right, exactly. Yep.
But I remember watching her, it was 4 or 5 games a year and she would call the national championship. I'm like, oh, that would be fun. Like I think I could do that. So I ended up like getting in touch with the athletic department at UVA and I was calling games not even on TV, on like institutional streams. So like you would just like watch the ball tracker. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I got started. I was terrible. Like, I had zero idea what I was doing. And I obviously thought, like, when I rolled up to my first game that I was going to have, like, Maria Taylor status, like, cameras, lights, makeup. Not true. Not true. But it was fun and it was challenging and I was terrible, but I wanted more.
Right.
I wanted more of it, even though I wasn't amazing at it. It's such a different lens that you look through when you're a former player calling a game, or even if you've been around the sport for a while. I don't think you have to play to be able to call the game. But it was a way for me to highlight and honor all of these women and their experiences and validate what they were going through. Yes, it's about lacrosse, but it's so much more than that. As you know, you and Amari do a great job telling stories outside of the game. And that's what it's really all about. You know, it's relationships. I think back to my playing days, it's all about relationships and culture. And same now, like, we're speaking the word to people who are listening, who are young lacrosse players, boys and girls and fans. And, you know, we want to put the best product forward, and it's the people on the field who are that product, and they're amazing, and their identity is not just lacrosse. So I think, you know, that's sort of like my motivation for continuing to be a part of it. And also initially what got me involved.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I think you hit on something really important that I, even more so now than before, try to always kind of highlight, is like, obviously accomplishments on the field are great, but accomplishments off the field are also great. And there's so many ways that you can thrive in the sport of lacrosse. Like, I was by no means the best player in the world or on the teams that I was on. Like, maybe I'll, you know, one day I was probably the best. I don't know. I'll give myself. But I was able to turn my passion into the sport, into like a kind of career that I embrace and that I love, like getting to travel and coach and play. You know, I was just in Harlem doing a clinic for the Harlem Jets. And that's something that I really embrace, getting to do this interview with you and, you know, being part of Sound On and all these different opportunities that I was able to do because, yes, I played the sport of lacrosse, but I loved it. And I just wanted to stay involved in it. And I think that that also pushes me to highlight different stories, because I want whoever's listening to know, like, there are so many paths in this game to get to the level and the goals that you want to get to.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And I also think too, we primarily just cover Division I, but I often say all the time that, you know, playing at the next level, regardless of what division that is a huge accomplishment. Like, it is not easy to play at the next level, regardless if it's Division I, II, or III, and go to school and get a degree. Like, at the end of the day, the most important thing is graduating and getting a degree that you will have for the rest of your life, should lacrosse not work out for you. And I think that is the most important thing. I lose track of that sometimes. I was having a conversation with a coach a few weeks ago, and we were kind of just talking about how we all focus on the stats. And I do that. Like, before I'm calling a game, I go to the box score, I go to the individual tab, and I look at, like, how many goals Jamie Ortega has and how many goals so-and-so has. But if you just look at the numbers, you miss so many stories. And so I've had to, like, retrain my brain to understand that, yes, stats are important. And if you are the leading point scorer in the ACC or in the NCAA history, that's also important. But those people have a story behind them, and they're motivated by something different than numbers. And so that, to me, is important to articulate to people who are watching. And I'm a fangirl of basically everybody who plays. I mean, we talk about this all the time in our group chat. I'm, like, blowing everybody up like they're the greatest, you know, thing since sliced bread. And they are, because they're role models. And I don't even know if they realize how big of role models they are for so many people. And there's so many people, not just young kids, but people who look up to them. And it's so important to be able to give them that glory.
Yeah. And, you know, we talked about women's basketball and how you played basketball. I feel like that sport in itself has done such an amazing job of, like, growing the sport in itself, but also the branding of all the players and the hype for the players and the respect within the basketball community for the players. Like, that is what I have always wanted and dreamt of. And I feel like we're building for women's lacrosse, because when I first started playing, when I started social media, like, people were ragging on women's lacrosse all the time. I would get into, like, 5 Twitter fights a day back in the day when I had time to be in Twitter beef, because I was just, like, annoyed and mad and angry at all these, you know, boys that were saying all these mean things about women's lacrosse. Now that does not fly. Like, as soon as someone says one thing that's disparaging about a player, a coach, the sport, it's like we all descend and we're like, no, you're not going to do that. And I think that's what matters so much for the growth. It you know, women's lacrosse's growth was never going to be hinged on is men's lacrosse growing. Obviously, it's all one sport, right? Like, I'm not saying, oh, it's two different things completely, whatever. But the growth of women's lacrosse in my mind is not directly correlated to, or it doesn't hinge on men's lacrosse growing, right? It's its own special entity. And like, we can celebrate that and build these players up and like boost Charlotte North, Jamie Ortega, you know, Sydney Watson, like all these amazing players that are doing their thing and crushing it. That's where it stands. That's where the growth is. Those role models, getting their names out there, helping them expand, helping more people learn about them. Like, that is what's going to really positively impact the game. And I think it's just so important to continue fostering and like storytelling to help with that growth.
I totally agree. And it also takes people at the top that are our bosses having that priority. And they do. And I'm going to shout out Erica Galbraith because she's amazing. And she's a champion for women's sports, but she's helped increase, you know, the number of games that are on the network, and Nikki and, you know, Paul Carcaterra and Anish and Quint, like, they're also champions for the women's game. And that is really helpful, you know, to grow exposure. But I agree, you know, the success is not related. You know, we're not hinging on if men's lacrosse does well. I just love that women's lacrosse is making a mark, and it's been a long time coming.
It has. Oh, I feel like I'm like, I've been fighting for this since I was 14. I need a nap. But no, it's super exciting. And yeah, storytelling is just so important. So I'm sure everyone listening is super curious. Like, how did ESPN come about for you? Because I think I've told my ESPN story where I got a DM from a random lady and she was like, hey, we need your email. And I was like, why does this random lady need my email address? Who is this? You know, look her up on LinkedIn, make sure she's legit. I was like, all right, cool. She's legit. And turned out to be our producer for ESPN, who I love and adore and just I'm the biggest fan of. Shout out to Heather Lee, shout out to you, shout out to Amari. But whenever I tell people that, they're like, you didn't have your email in your bio? They had to DM you. I'm like, no, girl, I was chilling. Like, who is this person asking for my email address? Why do they want to reach me? So I'm just curious how ESPN came about for you. And I think that's kind of, yeah, I guess the like meeting point for us too has been ESPN.
Yeah, it definitely, what's the best way to put it? I think everyone has a different path and there is no like script for like, this is how you get to work at XYZ, you know, and that's just life in general. You know, you think you have this plan, and then someone else has different timing and they come in and they disrupt it all. Yeah, so yeah. I started calling like institutional games at UVA because I was living in Charlottesville, working at the university and just getting reps. The ACC network was not a thing when I was calling games. It wasn't even established yet. And so I was calling institutional games, and then digital games started to make their way to the app. And so I started calling those, but really my success and my path came from a lot of people around me that helped me. Like, there was no way that I was gonna get on ACC Network if it wasn't for people, you know, saying my names in rooms that, you know, maybe I wouldn't have been in if I didn't have relationships with those people. And one of them is I can't remember his exact title, but his name is Slammer. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but it's Mike Slammer for short. So I was working with him. He was sort of the producer at UVA who gave me my initial shot. And he ended up connecting me with somebody who worked at ESPN right before the network was going to launch, the ACC network. And I had no idea. Like, I was so out of the loop on everything. And so I called my first TV game in March of 2020. And it was at North Carolina. And they were playing Louisville. It was like the greatest moment of my life. And I almost like didn't think it was real when I like received the email from the person that I got saying like, hey, like, we'd love to have a conversation with them. Like, this is spam. Like, I automatically like, don't think it's real.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how it all snowballed. But there were so many people in my corner that were building me up and lifting me up. And like, Julie Myers is one of those people. And I wouldn't be where I am today without those people helping me. Like, I just don't think you get anywhere, you know, just by hard work. You have to be a good person and you have to have like relationships and like genuine relationships with people so they can speak on your behalf. Yeah. So I called my first game in March of 2020. on TV, and then the pandemic happened. Like, as we were on air, like, we were getting information, we'd be like, so this is it, you know, school's going to get shut down, everything is going to be canceled. And it was just this really surreal moment. I was like, I finally got my break, and now the pandemic is going to happen, and like, it's over, I'm never going to be Maria Taylor, like, it's done. But, you know, all things work for good, and there's a silver lining in everything. And so the pandemic happened, and there was no more lacrosse in 2020, and then 2021, everything was from home. And so that's kind of how the trajectory of my career happened. Very non-traditional, sort of bizarre in many ways. But I always will remember, and still remember, it still happens today, like, the people who helped me and, you know, provide feedback and are, you know, championing me and others. And I'm just so grateful for those people. You know, Erica's one of them, and Aaron Katzman, and even, you know, people that I've worked with that work at ESPN and are big timers, you know, they reach out. Kelsey Riggs is one person that I look up to, and she's like such a role model to me. And she, you know, takes time out of her day to talk to me and, you know, ask me how I'm doing. And to have people like that in your life that you look up to, but then also are really genuine people, I think makes my experience that much better and just helps me in my trajectory. So
absolutely. Absolutely. And I think a lot of people maybe don't know too, like, that you were calling games from home. Like, we recorded Sound On from home and still do record Sound On from home. But you, yeah, called games like from your home, and it was like the show had to keep going. The show had to keep moving. Games had to be called, things had to happen. So what has that experience been like? Obviously now you're a veteran and like know all about it, but what was it like calling that first game from home? What were your expectations, your fears? Like, just how did it even work, really?
Well, thank you for saying that I'm a veteran, but I'm still such a newbie. I was calling a game at Duke or at Virginia Tech last week, and there were three call boxes and I was using the wrong call box. So like, I was hitting like the mute button and it was the wrong mute button.
It's because they had one person, you know, better one thing at a time. One thing at a time.
So I continue to be humbled by those experiences, but calling games from home, it was my first season. Last year was my first season working with ESPN, and everything was from home. So I didn't meet any of the people I was working with for over a year, which I think is pretty rare and also unique. But I will say, despite calling games from home, I had such a great connection with everybody that I worked with, which to me spoke volumes, because I was like, I don't even know who these people are in person, but yet we have this connection. We have this, you know, point of reference and this relationship, but yet we've only talked on the phone and called games together. So I think that's really special. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that continues to stick out to me about the people at ESPN, that they're great. Like, you talk about Heather Lee and, you know, Erica and Nikki and all of those people, Anish, Carr Quinn, Cotter, you know, those people are amazing individuals, and they've all helped us, you know, in our careers. And so, I mean, I think I met Jay Alter for the first time, like, at the national championship game last year, which, like, I'd worked with him all season.
Right.
And so to be able to have that chemistry, not meeting in person, and then have it when you're in person, I think is special. But I was extremely stressed out last year. I mean, everything was new. I had no idea what I was doing. I knew that I knew the game of lacrosse, but, you know, I wasn't confident, and I always doubted myself. I mean, that's natural. You know, I still do that today, but just being at home, like in my living room, calling a game with, like, really, it's just me. Like, if the technology goes out, like, what do I do? Like, I don't know. I barely can, like, log on to Zoom these days. So it's a whole process. And, you know, there's a lot of people that make the show go on behind the scenes that we don't talk about. And those people are incredible. But it was such a unique experience learning and growing, but by myself in my home. Like, I would finish a game and I was like, what do I do? Like, that was just 2.5 hours of, like, the greatest action ever. I'm so amped up.
Yeah.
I guess I'll go for a walk, because I don't know what to do with all this nervous energy. But it was fun and it was exciting. It was challenging and I was stressed out, mostly because I'm a perfectionist. But it taught me a lot about myself. And it definitely solidified the fact that I love doing this and I want to get better and I want to learn more. And I will say now being in person is amazing. And you get the energy from, you know, the team and the field and the fans and all of that, that you sort of miss and forgot about. I still catch myself when I'm at games watching the game on the monitor, because for a whole year I was calling games from my living room on a big TV monitor. So it's definitely been a great experience, but very different. Last year was very different than this year, but I think that's the fun and exciting part about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the energy part that you mentioned too, like the nervous energy, I feel the same. Like when we record Sound On, it's like the best, you know, 30 minutes, the best hour ever. We're having so much fun. Like I know it's going to be on TV. People are going to see this at home in restaurants, bars. Like, it's going to be amazing. And then I close my laptop and I FaceTime Amari and I'm like, so what you going to do now? Like, what are you up to? Let's catch up. And it's still so weird to me that I'm on TV. Like, I know it probably does. When I say this to people, they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, I can't believe that I'm on TV. Like, that's my face and people see it and they tweet at me about it. And I've seen it myself. My parents are so cute. Like, my mom will record on her phone every single episode. She'll like have her phone up to the TV and then send it to us. My girl, we have the link. Like, we could download it, but she does her thing. And it's kind of like, it's just the coolest thing ever. Like, I feel like we have the coolest jobs ever. It's just wild to me. Even in person, like being at the national championship in person last year and, you know, working for IL there too, it was wild. I remember being in the press box and I was sitting next to Hallie and everyone's quiet, like everyone's super serious, like typing their notes, doing their thing, watching Charlotte North scores the first goal. I jump out of my seat. I was like, oh my gosh. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And so, yeah, I think it's just one thing that I love about our crew, especially is one, like the humbleness remains, but the excitement for the game, the love for the game, and like just how we bring that energy. And, you know, you mentioned connecting with Jay Alter and like being able to, or yeah, just having that, like that relationship start to build and working so well together, both, you know, virtually and in person, I think is just a testament to the way that we're all put together and like work together. We love the game. We're humble, we respect each other, and we just want to do the absolute best we can for the athletes that are on the field.
Totally. And it's everyone's the biggest fan of everyone.
Yeah.
You know, like
absolutely.
Jay always says to me, like, Dana, be confident. Like, you know, you add value to the broadcast. And so I appreciate those sort of like kind nudges from people that I work with, because we are new and this is, every day is different. Every game is different. I do have a funny story about the national championship game, sort of similar to that, but it was my first time on the sidelines as a sideline analyst for the Final Four in the national championship. And I remember obviously being like super hesitant and like, it was at Towson. So there was that track around the field. Yeah. And like, I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. So I was just kind of like hanging out on the track. And I remember I turned around and I saw Kirsten Kimmel behind me. She was at the Final Four. And she says, like, she was like, go in there, like, get in there. Like, you need to be front and center, like, do your thing. And I just remember being like, okay, I needed that. Like, I needed that little nudge and that little like boost of confidence to go in there. And then I was like, basically on the bench. Like, I was part of each of the teams at that point.
Let
I was like,
Gatorade. Let me get a Gatorade. Thank you.
I did take some Gatorade at one point. But I just remember like after the game being like, wow, like, I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. You know, little boost, little nudge. I needed the nudge in the moment. I did. And Jay and Sheen were up in the booth. So like, I know that they would have done that if they were down on the field, but to have somebody that I look up to, Kirsten Kimmel, and she's an excellent role model for the sport, but she was like, get in there. You got to get in. You got to get on the sidelines. Like, we need you to get in there and tell the stories. And I really appreciate that. And I think it is very like overarching to how women's lacrosse feels in general. Like, everybody's supporting everybody, whether you're a coach, but they're an SID, an admin, a player. I think it's just special, and I'm biased, but there's nothing like women's lacrosse.
Not at all. Ain't nothing like it. And speaking of, you know, the positive nudges and even feedback too, I think for me, like I've always been pretty good with feedback, but this being a completely new realm, it's not just feedback on something I wrote or feedback on, you know, a PowerPoint that I made. It's like feedback on, okay, have your shoulders up and like look at the camera and, you know, talk slow. Like I know I speak very fast. I've always, when I get excited, I'm just like so happy to be talking to someone, and I just have to like get all my words out. And, you know, those are things that I've had to work on. And I am so happy to be in an environment where people provide me feedback. And I know that one is they want me to be the best I can be. They know I can do it. And they provide the feedback in a way that allows me to grow. And we can like measure that growth. But I think I did have to get over that hump of being like, oh no, they hate me. Like I'm doing such a bad job. Like I'm about to get fired today. Like this is it. So how do you take in feedback and kind of take in those nudges and use that as like positive energy and not let that affect you?
I think for me, growing up playing so many different sports and like being an athlete, I'm used to constructive feedback and criticism, and I don't take it personally. I think I have obviously have those doubts of like, oh, I messed up on the air. Like I shouldn't have said that. Or like I mess up on words that I say normally in every day, but for some reason on TV, everything is different. And so that feedback that I get from people in the company are people who I respect mm-hmm. and people who I know want me to be better. So I don't take it in a way that, I don't take it personal because I know that they're trying to help me grow and I am new to this. And so I love feedback. I welcome it. And I think it's from being an athlete. Like, yeah. You know, I'd get benched on at Virginia for like shooting like 7 times and never hitting the cage. And like Colleen Shearer would be like, you're benched. Like you're playing terrible. And like, I was like, you're right. And I never took it personal when I was in college, you know, obviously in the moment I was like, yeah, whatever, Colleen, yada, yada. But, you know, after the game, you're like, you know what, that is, that's right. You were right. And at the end of the day, you know, we're trying to put the best product forward on TV, just like when you're an athlete, you know, you want to put all the players on the field who are going to help you win. And sometimes it's not, you know, the best player on your team, or sometimes you're having an off game and that's normal, but can you provide feedback and can that person take that, not take it personal, but use it in a way to help motivate you?
Yeah.
And so that's sort of how I take the feedback. And I go back and I watch myself on games, and it's so painful sometimes to listen to yourself speak. And I often think, why did I say that? Or what was going through my brain? But I also am my biggest critic. So I go back and I watch like every game that I do or every appearance that I make on TV to try to correct myself before I get feedback from somebody else so I can understand like where it's coming from. And I also am a speed talker. I could probably win an award for being a speed talker, but I get so excited and I want to get so much information in, but I have to remember that people who are watching these games, you know, yes, most of them are lacrosse fans, but maybe some of them are new. So maybe I don't need to inundate them with every single stat about Jamie Ortega.
Yeah.
So it's a learning process and every day is different and it's challenging. And so that keeps me on my toes. Like if I'm not challenged, then I get bored and I'm not passionate about it, but this is like the complete opposite.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely. I love that perspective. And you know, the comparison to athletics too, like you want to be a better athlete and not taking it personally, using that as growth opportunities, like is the most important. And so for anyone out there listening that wants to get into broadcasting, what would you tell them? Like what steps should they take to start to kind of get more opportunities or start getting opportunities in these arenas?
I've had a few conversations with a bunch of females that want to get more involved and want to be in the booth, which I love because we need more, you know, women like myself, Sheehan, Rachel Ocheco, Courtney Connor. Like we can't call every game. It's just not possible. And so to have different voices and different perspectives, I think are so important. And I had a conversation with Mira Shane. I'm going to name drop her. Hope she doesn't mind, but we had a conversation a few weeks ago and you know, she really wants to get involved. And so I sort of told her, I'm like, where do you live? You know, are there any colleges around you? Because the chances are that somebody needs someone to call a game. And so to have that rep or those reps is super important. I was like, you know, do you live close to Princeton or do you live close to, you know, Loyola? Like,
yeah,
just reach out to the athletic department. And if you live by a college, chances are they need somebody on the mic. And that's a great way to get reps. That's how I started. So I would just say, just do it and find a way to get in the booth. And it doesn't have to be perfect. You don't have to be amazing. And you know, I mess up every day when I'm on TV. So know that you're going to mess up and it's not going to ever be perfect because we are imperfect human beings, and try to make connections. And I also, and I know you're the same way too, but like, if anyone's interested, like I always want them to reach out to me. Like I'm happy to talk, You know, yeah. I would fill my day with talking to anybody who wanted to talk about women's lacrosse. So, you know, I'm a big proponent for getting more people involved, but you just have to find a way to start and, you know, lean on your connections. If you were a former player, like lean on your connections at the school you went to, like Miro went to Michigan. So I was like, do you know anybody at Michigan still that could help you? So that was probably my biggest piece of advice for anybody who wants to get started. You know, I know that we're all open to having those conversations. Like, you know, Sheehan's the GOAT. She could probably provide great perspective. But just be open and be willing to, you know, do something that's uncomfortable, because it is uncomfortable for us every day when we go on TV. I hope one day it's not. I hope one day I can just wake up and, you know, not be stressed and not wake up seven times through the night thinking about it. But it's important to me, and it's important for me to put the best product out there so the women that are playing on the field are honored and, you know, highlighted. So yeah, just find a way, weasel your way in there and get started.
Yeah. You never know. Like I think, especially the past few years, I've learned, like running my startup, you never know who is going to see your email or who's going to see your LinkedIn message. Just email them, LinkedIn them. Like, who cares if you're scared or if you're like, I don't know if they'll read it or I'm ashamed. Like, just send it. You never know.
And you never know who's listening, which like is kind of an eerie thing to think about. But
that too.
You know, I watch a lot of lacrosse, and I don't just watch lacrosse that's on TV. And I know that I'm not the only person who does that.
Yeah.
So you never know who's listening to that ESPN Plus game or that ACC Network Extra game. Like, people listen, people watch. And that's sort of how part of my path to getting discovered was someone just watched me call like an ESPN Plus game.
Yeah, absolutely. Same. Like, someone heard me calling sixes, and then they were like, oh, she's really good and we like her. She should come to Portugal. And like, that's how I ended up in Portugal. And also socially, like, I think for me, my path has obviously been driven a lot by social media. And then I'm kind of now like really getting ingrained to calling games, but I love social media because you can start to build your platform and start sharing your ideas just on your own time and organically. And when someone does call on you and say, hey, like, would you be interested in calling games? Or do you have any samples? You already have stuff that you've written about or that you've said or that you've kind of done sound bites of. And so, yeah, I think just like utilizing social media to connect with people and get your name out there too is huge, in my opinion.
Yeah. And saying yes to something that may be really scary. Like, if I didn't say yes to calling that first linear TV game, like, I wouldn't be talking to you now. And it was frightening. And so I was so afraid and I was so nervous, like, oh gosh, like even going back to that time, I'm like, why was I so nervous? Like, just, you know, be confident and know what you know. So I'm a big proponent of like anything that maybe scares you is probably a good idea to try.
Yeah, no, when I got that DM, and when I remember sitting on the Zoom call, it was me, Amari, Heather Lee, and then John Kettering. And JK was like, oh, like how, after they explained the format that ESPN wanted for the show, he's like, what are you thinking? Like, how do you feel? What do you think about what we said? And I'm like, I still can't believe this is real. Like, I'm just trying to digest. And I had never really done on-camera stuff. At the time, I was just like very scared about being in front of the camera. I was like, people are going to be staring at my face. That makes me feel weird. But in my head, I said, you cannot say no to ESPN, girl. You cannot. I was like, you need to get over the camera shyness. I don't care. I don't care about it. Get over it. Where do I sign? Like, what's next? And doing sound on, like, obviously being in such a positive environment with Amari and Heather Lee and just getting to shape the show in our way and like bringing our personalities, I think that helped me start to really get over that camera shyness, because I'm like, okay, if I can do that and if that can be seen by all these people, then I can do the next thing and I can do the other thing. And you know, it is scary, and I think it's just part of growth, and you don't really reach that next level that you want to be at unless you push yourself to grow. So yeah, there was no way I was saying no to ESPN. Like, no one would ever have let me say no to that. So glad that that worked out. Glad we got over it.
I totally understand. I'm a big proponent, and you know, what's the saying? Grow through what you go through.
Yeah.
Is that the saying? I like that, because it's very applicable to a lot of the things, not just in commentating or being on TV, but you know, even as a player, even the women that we're watching and calling games for, you know, they're struggling, you know, there are things that are uncomfortable that they're going through, but they're just doing it because you just got to push through and know that you can ask for help and know that you can lean on people, but, you know, just be resilient. And I think that's like the biggest thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So as we kind of wind down, obviously this summer is going to be huge for Women's Lacrosse. I'm like excited, overwhelmed, can't sleep, so anxious, so just ready for it. We've got, you know, the women's world championships happening in Towson. Then we got the world games happening in Alabama. Dana, what does this summer mean for women's lacrosse from your perspective?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I am excited that there's more opportunities for these women to get showcased. That wasn't the case a few years ago, not just with Team USA, but now we have sixes and now we have the world games. And it's great for women to continue to play and to continue to get that exposure that they deserved. And people like, you know, Jen Adams worked for, like, she's such a champion for the sport and she's incredible and her playing career was amazing, but she didn't have those opportunities. And so now that there are those opportunities in place, I'm so excited and thankful that, you know, we'll all play some sort of part in that, but that these women get continued experience and they're gonna get better at lacrosse. And that is like the crazy, scary thing in the best way, is that like, these women that are on the field, like I talk about this all the time. I'm like, I think that for like one split second, I'm like, oh, I could definitely play now. And then it takes me like a half a second to be like, first of all, my knees and my hips are aching. And I'm like, absolutely not. Could I run? But the skill level is like out of this world. Like the things that they are doing on the field, they are changing the game forever. And it's not just Charlotte North. Like she's incredible, but like there are athletes on that field that, you know, when I was playing, people couldn't keep up with. And I think that's super incredible. And they get more exposure and they deserve that because they work really hard. And I'm excited for lacrosse to kind of grow in that trajectory. And we were talking about it earlier, but I always look at women's basketball as like the North Star for women's lacrosse. And so to have more opportunities for these women to play outside of their collegiate experience and then bring that experience back to their college teams, like, that is going to change the game and it's going to make the game better. Yeah. And I can't wait to be a fan.
Yeah, same. Oh, love it. We love it. We love it. Well, Dana, thank you so much for jumping on the pod with me. This has been so much fun. Always enjoy our conversations. And I'm so proud of us both for getting after it, for helping other people and for celebrating the people that have helped us get to where we are today. I'm super excited for the rest of the season. We've got ACCs coming up, all the different, you know, championships and things like that happening around the sport. And yeah, just really excited to keep collaborating, creating all this magical lacrosse content together.
Magical lacrosse content. I love it. You said it best. And it's just April.
It's so early. We are just getting started. Cool. And yeah, everyone listening in, thank you so much for tuning in to Shooting Space. I will catch you next time. Have a good one.
IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.